I'm speaking with Alex Honnold. He's one of the best rock climbers on Earth and is the main author of the book Alone on the Wall. Veteran climber David Roberts co-authored the book. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Thanks for having me on.
First off, explain the type of climbing you practice. I understand there are no ropes or carabiners to keep you safe.
So that's called free soloing, and that is part of what I do in climbing. But I mean, I've been climbing for 20 years, and I practice all forms of climbing. And that's a big part of why I wrote the book, to sort of show, you know, the different aspects of climbing that I do and the different types of expeditions that I've been on.
This is high-stakes climbing. How do you grapple with the worst-case scenario? Death.
Well, I mean, obviously I try to minimize, you know, falling or dying, you know, through preparation and training and all those kinds of things. You know, I mean, there's no pressure for me to go soloing, so if I'm not feeling totally up for it, then I just put it off till later.
Tell me about your book, Alone on the Wall. It's split into 7 of your most memorable climbs. What are they?
They're all just, like, significant in a sense for me, starting with some of the early free solos that I did, and then sort of building in complexity as I started big wall soloing, like using some ropes and hardware, but still climbing mostly by myself, and then culminating in like a big alpine traverse that I did in Patagonia.
I think in your second chapter you talked a lot about Half Dome. Was that one of those early on type of climbs you did?
Moonlight Buttress was like the first big solo that I did, and Half Dome was sort of the second, and both of those represented like big steps forward for me because they'd never been done before, and you know, they were definitely like venturing into new ground.
Tell me about David Roberts, who contributed to each chapter. What does he bring to your story?
David felt that he needed his voice involved to add perspective to what I've climbed, because he felt that if it was all in my voice, it would be too understated. I mean, typically my writing is just like, well, you know, I had a nice time, it was delightful, I really enjoyed the climb, but he felt that that didn't really give like the proper depth to the roots. You know, because when I describe my experiences, I'm obviously not like, it was the most groundbreaking solo ever done. It was like so amazing. And so David felt that the book needed something like that to help put it into perspective.
I've done a little climbing myself, but fear keeps me from taking any daunting routes. How do you manage that fear? Do you keep a journal?
It's not like I have to overcome fear in the sense of like suppressing it or like holding it down. I mean, the thing is, if I feel a lot of fear, then I can just put something off until I'm better trained or until I'm better equipped for it. The important thing for me, at least, has been differentiating between, you know, an appropriate fear, like a fear because I'm in danger, and like an irrational fear that's just like all in my mind. I mean, if I'm feeling fear because I'm actually in danger, like because there's a chance I might fall off or a chance I might die, then I mean, that's like a very helpful warning, and, you know, I should heed that. Whereas if I'm feeling totally irrational fear, then that's when you can just like take some deep breaths and sort of overcome it.
How did you go from this little-known climber to one of the most famous adventure athletes in the world?
All kind of been a slow snowball. A couple of the first big solos I did were made into climbing films, and then a producer from 60 Minutes saw one of the climbing films, and so then he profiled me for 60 Minutes, and then that got seen by millions of people, and you know, it's all just sort of like escalated. I don't really know. You know, I mean, it's kind of a miracle to me too.
I understand you have a certain love affair with the Sierra Nevada. Tell me about the climbs you've taken there and your history with it.
So I grew up in Sacramento, California, so I spent my childhood, you know, hiking and camping in the Sierra. So, I mean, just like the smell of the pine forest there to me still feels very much like home. I mean, I love the Sierra. And then, you know, Yosemite is obviously in the Sierra Nevada, and that's like where I've done the majority of my climbing. Pretty much love everything about Yosemite. I think El Cap is probably the most impressive piece of rock in the world, and that's after having traveled pretty extensively, you know.
That climb must have been daunting. Talk about the first time you climbed it.
The first time I climbed El Cap, I think it was maybe 2006. I mean, I was still learning how to climb big walls. And my partner and I spent 22 hours on the wall and got totally worked. And, it, you know, it's just like a big learning experience, big adventure. And actually, one of the chapters in the book is describing doing the speed record on El Cap, climbing the nose in 2.5 hours, which was pretty cool for me to have that progression, you know, to go from spending a whole day getting completely worked to spending 2.5 hours and feeling super comfortable.
And how many times have you climbed it now?
I'm not totally sure. I've probably climbed El Cap maybe 40 times. I mean, I've climbed El Cap over 4 days, and then I've climbed it, you know, in 2.5 hours, like via different routes.
How do you decide whether you want to climb it in 1 day or 4 days? Or
just has to do with the difficulty of the route and the style in which I'm climbing it. So, I mean, if I'm trying to free climb the wall via a hard route, then, you know, it might take me up to 4 days or 5 days. If I'm just trying to get up the wall as fast as I can, then, you know, then I cheat. I pull on gear. I, like, step on bolts. I do whatever it takes, and then that only takes, like, 2.5 hours.
In Chapter 2, you climb Half Dome. But not like the millions of people who go there every year and climb the backside of it. You climb the face of it. What was that like? It was only your second big climb. Talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, no, that's not fair to say my second big climb. It was my second, like, groundbreaking free solo. But I mean, I'd already climbed the face of Half Dome with the rope several times, and I'd already climbed El Cap, and I'd done a lot of big climbing. I just hadn't free soloed big walls like that before. But so, I mean, it definitely felt like a huge adventure for me. And I describe it extensively in the book, but I got a little bit afraid. You know, it turned out being a little bit more than I bargained for. But you know, that's kind of the nature of adventure, is getting in over your head a little bit and, you know, dealing with it.
You leave a note in Alone on the Wall about Dean Potter. He's a base jumper who died at Taft Point in Yosemite earlier this year. How did his death affect you?
It definitely, you know, made me think for a couple of days. I mean, Dean was a bit of a friend, and it's weird for me. I just reread the whole book from beginning to end recently, and I mean, there are a lot of references to Dean throughout it, since he was a big inspiration for me as a kid. And it was unfortunate with his accident, like it was already too late in the publishing process for us to, like, change the whole text. So, you know, all I could do was add a little afterward, a little author's note, you know, in tribute for Dean. I mean, he was a big influence on, like, why I climb the way I climb. You know, ultimately, I mean, he knew what he was getting into, and I know what I'm getting into, and, you know, he made his choices, and, I mean, I still love climbing just as much, and so that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. Though honestly, like, long ago, I decided that I would never wingsuit or base jump or do any of those things because I think it's entirely too dangerous. And so, you know, the fact that he died in a wingsuiting accident, like, isn't that shocking in a way.
You say you do all these types of climbing. What's the difference between when you're actually out on the rock with ropes versus just your hands and your feet and some chalk in a bag?
Obviously, it's much higher consequence when you're free soloing. I mean, climbing without a rope, you know, I mean, you're basically not allowed to make a mistake. And so, you know, I feel like it requires a higher level of focus and in turn, you know, is slightly more satisfying, or it's just more rewarding, I guess. Like, basically you have to put more into the experience, and so I feel like I get more out of it as well.
It sounds quite exhilarating. Is there a place you go to inside of you that's different than when you're out with ropes and bolts and things like that on a rock?
I don't know if exhilarating is the word I would use, but I mean, it's definitely, it's more of something. For sure, it's like a more meaningful experience. I guess it takes me to a different place. I mean, it just requires a higher level of focus.
Why turn to the pages instead of just keep on climbing, climbing, climbing?
Well, honestly, I've done so many films and interviews and, like, articles and so many, like, little things. I feel like there's a lot of pieces of me scattered all over the internet and, like, publications. And so it was pretty satisfying to put it all in one place and sort of tell the story the way I want to. Just because, you know, everyone gets the impression that all I do is free solo. And so by writing the book, I was hoping to put that all into a better context. And sort of show that I have actually spent 20 years rock climbing, and I do all kinds of different climbing, and, you know, been on expeditions all over the world, and, you know, kind of put it into the proper context to make it, like, a little more understandable.
20 years is a huge time span for climbing, but is there a moment that you want to share out of the book that sticks out from one of these experiences?
I don't know. I mean, you just got to read the book. It's like each chapter has some kind of little anecdotes or stories like that. I don't even know where I'd begin. It's like, you know, my whole life is like fun little stories.
So you're only 30. What's next for you?
Hopefully I'll just keep climbing the way I've been climbing for, you know, the indefinite future. And I mean, you know, honestly, that's part of writing the book and everything too, is to hopefully be able to support myself into my old age, you know, keep climbing in the same way.
Before we go, lots of climbers listen to Valley Public Radio because of how close we are to the Sierra Nevada. What sort of advice would you leave with them?
My go-to advice for any climber who's trying to become a better climber is to work on their footwork and work on technique, you know, and body position, all those kinds of things. But in a more general sense, I guess I would say that, you know, if you're trying to improve, you just have to constantly push outside your comfort zone a little bit. You know, for me, it's been all like baby steps out of my comfort zone, like constantly doing something that's like a little bit harder than what I did before, but like slowly and systematically, like broadening your comfort zone until you feel pretty comfortable with like any type of climbing.
That's Alex Honnold. He's a main author of the book Alone on the Wall, available in bookstores across the country. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.